This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech, episode 491, recorded on Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. A little show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Along for the ride and the journey, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally. Thanks again for taking the lead last week in my absence on my vacation.
See my smile? I'm so happy you're back. So happy you get to introduce Wells Tech. And people don't know this, but beforehand, you always count down 3, 2, 1. I actually tried to do that last week, and I couldn't even do that right. So we're really happy to have you back, Martin.
Came across fine. Thanks to you and to Jason for the time you took. Yeah. That was a great show.
We had a lot of fun, always with Jason, yeah. Hey, since we're talking about Jason, we maybe should do a quick shout-out to our friend Rachel Feld, our other semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. I heard that she accepted a call to Martin Luther College. She's awesome. One of the newest professors at MLC, and she'll be doing educational technology work there. So excited to have her joining the staff, and kudos to Jim Grunwald, who's retiring this year, who's carried the banner for educational technology for many years at MLC.
Yep. Hopefully we can still encourage her to join the show and be a part of it. So that's great. Congratulations, Rachel. Blessings on that new ministry. That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Speaking of ministry and technology, we have another show to do, 491 here, and a very focused show this week. It's on a particular, I don't know, would you call it task management style or methodology?
I guess we could just lump it into productivity, because I think people use it for a lot of different things. But we did have the chance to talk with Pastor Stephen Daly, who's over in South Haven, Michigan, at St. Paul Lutheran Church and School there in South Haven. And Pastor Daly does use it as a task manager. It's the bullet journal. And get ready, folks, because this is analog and it involves paper and pen. So probably one of the first for Wells Tech podcasts. So
there are probably ways, and I researched a few of those, that it could be digitized, because there are people who take this bullet journal concept and wrap it into, you know, OneNote or Evernote or some other kind of tablet stylus kind of thing, which is kind of cool as well. So but without further ado, let's have a listen to that interview with Pastor Daly, and then we can come back and react to that.
Joining us today on Wells Tech is Pastor Steve Daly. He serves at St. Paul in South Haven, Michigan, and is a longtime Wells Tech listener and contributor. Happy to have you joining us today, Pastor.
Happy to be here, Sally and Martin.
Welcome, Steve.
Awesome. And maybe you could just reacquaint our Wells Tech listeners with a little bit about Pastor Daly, maybe your family, hobbies, whatever you want to share.
Well, I'm currently serving at St. Paul Lutheran Church in South Haven, Michigan. This is actually the fourth place I've served during my ministry, so I've moved around a bit. I am married to my lovely wife, Heidi, and we have our three kids. Katie is our youngest. Samuel's the middle child, our boy, and then Amy is our oldest, who's about to graduate from high school. So I feel like my hobby is filling out all of the financial forms that the colleges send that she's applying to.
That sounds like a great hobby. I feel your pain there.
Yep.
So we actually wanted to talk to you today a bit about bullet journaling, and we understand you're a bullet journal fan and wondered if you could tell us what it is and how it has technology ties.
Sure, Sally. Actually, I'm a huge bullet journal fan. I've been a bullet journal user since November 2013. Actually, when I started my call here, I decided to switch to that as one of my tools in my productivity tool chest. And what I would describe the bullet journal as is it's really an analog technology that's actually very popular with those who are big into tech and use a lot of other tech tools. I would put it in the category, if you're thinking about productivity tools, we oftentimes will divide our productivity tools into different areas, different buckets. For example, a calendar is one bucket. Email management might be another bucket. But task management would be one of those buckets. And I would put the bullet journal as my task manager in that particular bucket. I think there's other parts of my productivity system that I don't have in the bullet journal for that very reason. I think the bullet journal is good at task management, and not necessarily at managing all the other productivity buckets.
So before we ask you to describe what actually a bullet journal is, I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't know, what did you switch from and why the switch? Was something that you were using not working for you? Were you more digital? What was previous to your bullet journal?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that, Martin. I think bullet journaling, when I found Ryder Carroll's website, he's kind of the creator of the bullet journal. But really what he did is he just took a common system that I think most of us have used in the past, if we've ever done task management, if we've ever written out a to-do list. He really just kind of took the idea of writing out a to-do list and kind of systematized it so that your to-do list is always fresh and updated, and you're attacking that to-do list on a regular basis and reviewing it regularly as well. So I would say that I actually was doing something similar to bullet journaling all the way back in high school when I was organizing myself back then. And then through the years, I've used a number of digital tools. I had a Palm Pilot for a while that I really enjoyed. I used the task management system on there. I've tried other online tools. Toodledoo, I think, is one of the mm-hmm. ones that I tried, an online website. And what I found is lacking in those digital tools, and one of the reasons why I've turned back to the bullet journal idea and really have kept with it, is I don't know if you've ever experienced this. I imagine other listeners have. If you've used one of those digital tools like Todoist, Asana, many of the other task managers that are out there, Trello, sometimes what I experienced was, well, I would get everything in that system, but then I wasn't very good about reviewing the tasks that were in that system. I would kind of think to myself, well, they're all backed up and in the cloud, and so I don't really review them as regularly as you should. And if you're into productivity at all, you know that weekly review process mm-hmm. is an important part of the puzzle. And so I wasn't reviewing my tasks regularly. Or something else that I found myself doing is with those digital tools, they had so many arrays of options that I would sit there and rearrange my tasks and add all these little notes and other things, and then I would spend more time managing my to-do list and not actually doing anything.
Doing it, right.
And so I just found that getting away from those digital tools and putting my task management back down on paper using a bullet journal and a pencil was the way to go for me.
Okay. So it's totally analog. What can you briefly describe what it is? What makes it different than, let's say, the old day timers and those kinds of checklists where you put a star or you green or, you know, all those other kinds of systems? Why is this one any better?
Well, personally, why I like this system, Martin, is because it's so simple and you don't need specialized tools or even a specialized paper planner. Mm-hmm. You literally can use any notebook you want. If you want to use loose leaf paper in a three-ring binder, you can use that. If you want to use any kind of notebook under the sun, you can use that as well. And just as an example, I have all of my bullet journals since
different
2013,
yep.
All different shapes and sizes.
Found, yep.
And I brought my first one just so everybody could see. This was an old steno notepad I had. This is the mm-hmm. first bullet journal I ever used. I used it for the first month when I was bullet journaling. All it was a steno notebook that I probably had for 13 years, and it was only partially full. And so I just went to the first blank page, started bullet journaling for that first month, and that was my first bullet journal. And then I switched at the turn of the year to this one. And this has the entire year of 2014, and it actually was big enough, had enough pages that I could use this as my bullet journal for an entire year. And then I've had other ones since, as you saw. This is my current one, just a Staples notebook that you can buy. It's just a spiral-bound notebook. One of the reasons I really like this one is because, and the front flap thing is just a little case to hold pencils or pens. But you can actually, it has a little pocket in the front, a little pocket folder, so you can have your, keep a few things right in there. And that's one of the things that a lot of the bullet journals that are advertised as bullet journals that you can buy, they often have a little pocket or an envelope in them. This was cheap. I think this was under $4 at Staples, and I like cheap, so it works well for me. So
low barrier to entry.
Yep. And I just also brought along, too, this is, I'm actually excited about switching to this. I'm actually going to be using just a composition book next month. I'm switching to a new bullet journal next month, and I'm going to try just using a composition journal just because they're cheap. I mean, they're $2, $2.25, I think, is what that one costs, which is on the expensive side for those. And I wanted to just give it a try to see, hey, would this work well as a bullet journal, too?
So I'm assuming bullets have something to do with the system?
Correct. Okay. And I brought along one of my books. I put a sample bullet journal. It consists of a very simple system of bullets, Martin, and simple pages as well. So what you would have in the front of your bullet journal is you'd have an index page. So I kind of have a sample there. I don't know how well it's showing up on the video. But that's the like a sample index page. And the idea behind that is in the very front pages of your notebook, whatever notebook you're using, you would list where is everything in the book. So those are page numbers. So if your book does not have page numbers, you can just write those page numbers in down in the bottom corners. That's what I do. And then you can always reference where those things are in your book. The next part that was added by quite a few bullet journalers was a future log. I don't really use that a whole lot. The future log is kind of like an index that would go out maybe 6 to even 12 months. And like I put in there as a sample, I put in for April, well, you might want to put in the future log that you got to pay taxes on the 15th, or you might want to put when your family vacation is so that you can, you know, when somebody asks you, well, can I have an appointment during that week, you can look quickly and say, oh, nope, can't have an appointment during that time because I'm going to be on family vacation in a couple months. And then the next then the first pages that you would have in your bullet journal that you would regularly fill in after your index is called the monthly spread. And so I have an example of that there, a sample. And the monthly spread is simply just a list of all the days of the month going down. And the way a lot of people misuse a bullet journal, at least what I find anyway in helping people with bullet journaling, is they look at that as a calendar for where you would schedule things. Really, it was never meant for that. It was meant as kind of a one-line journal of what happened during that day that you want to remember. So you might put in things like, well, the council met on that particular day of the month in case somebody, you want to look back, well, when did the church council meet or when did this worship committee meet? You can put that into that calendar. It's just a one-line calendar. You might put in your last doctor's visit or the last time you had a dentist cleaning appointment. Mm-hmm. Or I put in the last time I changed my furnace filter. I mean, you always forget stuff like that. So it's a good to be able to look back at the previous month and say, well, when did I do these things that I do every month and change? So that's the calendar page. Then right after the calendar page, you do your monthly task list. And so I have a sample of that, a monthly task list. And then I've added something because I think this works really well for pastoral ministry. I also put in a monthly people list. And the monthly people list is a list of all the people I want to see face to face. So that's going to be my shut-ins that I want to see for the month, maybe delinquent members I'd like to have a face-to-face visit with, prospects I'd like to have a face-to-face visit with. I put them all there, and then on that one page, I can look and say, okay, well, who have I seen, who haven't I seen during this month? And now we get to the daily pages. That's really where the bullets come into play the most. And here, a daily page is simply a page that has the day of the whatever day it is. So today is what I have there. And then you can use a series of bullets. Now, there's two systems that, and I'll send an email to Sally that has a list of the videos that you can watch. And also, the bulletjournal.com website's a great resource for this, too. But Ryder Carroll actually introduced kind of two sets of bullets. The first set he introduced back in 2013, that's actually still the same set that I use, just because I like a box that I check off. The new set is just a dot, and then you do different things with that dot, depending on how you're managing that task. If you did the task, you cross out the dot. If it's an appointment, you actually make a circle around it, and then when you've done the appointment, you X through it. If you have to move a task from one day to the next, and that's really where the value for me has come in the bullet journal. Mm-hmm. Because what I said before, Martin, is oftentimes when I use that digital tool, I was terrible about reviewing my tasks because I knew they were all in there and I could just rearrange them, I figured, and I was terrible about actually sitting down and reviewing it. Well, the bullet journal kind of forces you to review because every time you turn the page, you can't see your tasks anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I have to do a page turn, I'm always reviewing my tasks. I'm looking over, well, what did I do? And sometimes when I come across a task I didn't do, I look at it and I say, well, boy, that task doesn't even apply anymore. I just cross it out completely and I don't even think about it. Or, oh, that's something very important that I really should still do. And so then I use a little arrow, and I have an example of that on here. Mm-hmm. A little arrow, and then I notice I write the date on top of it. That's just the way I do it. A little arrow and then the date, and that tells me, hey, I didn't do that today. I better go do that tomorrow. And then I rewrite the task on the next day. And some people have complained, well, isn't that a lot of rewriting? Well, it can be. If you put a lot of tasks in your daily pages that probably don't belong there and you keep moving them from day to day to day. But when you're doing your weekly review, sometimes you look at a task and you say, well, really, this is a someday maybe task. I'm probably not going to do this anytime soon, so it should go on to a someday maybe list. And so then I move it over to a someday maybe list. And that I keep in a digital format, a someday maybe list, because I review that less frequently. And then other tasks, too, are like, well, I'm not going to actually get that done this week. So then you should really move it over to your month task list. And then at the beginning of every week, I always look at my month task list and say, well, is there anything in the month task list I really should be getting done this week? And then I'll move it on to my daily pages. But really, the daily pages are that place where you can record absolutely everything that comes into your head. And that's another thing I like about the bullet journal. When you're looking at productivity, one of the things they talk about is have a trusted system where you can just file everything away. And I just keep my bullet journal open on my desk during the day, and I put everything in there that comes into my head. So a task comes into my head that I realize I need to do, I write it down. Now, it may not stay. I may not move it to the next day. I may end up moving it to my someday maybe list. I may end up moving it to my monthly task list. But it's there under the daily page because that's, like I said, I have that daily page open the whole day while I'm working. Somebody calls me and wants to make an appointment, I'll write that down too. Or a date comes popping into my head that I need to remember, I'll write that down too. So that is where I use like a little, for me, that's where I use the little bullets. Mm-hmm. And that's like council notes down there. So I will use that just to, if I want to note something. And then once I looked at that note and I've dealt with it, well, then I'll put a check mark next to it to remind me that I've dealt with it.
Okay. Do you ever look back at your historic journals, or are you pretty much transferring things month to month, day to day, and not really looking back a whole lot?
Yeah, that's a good question, Sally. That's another thing that people have wondered about. Well, do you look back frequently? Actually, I find that it's an archive I don't have to go back and deal with a lot, because what I should be doing every month is dealing with all those tasks that are in there. Mm-hmm. And deciding, well, do they go into my someday maybe list? Did I not get it done last month? Should it go on the next month's task list? Then it goes there. Should it really get done today? Well, then it goes on my daily page for the day. And so I keep dealing with all the tasks and everything that's in there so that I really don't find a lot of reason to that I have to go back to that historic record, but it is there. I have gone back to the monthly calendar section. Like I said, if I want to look up, well, when was that last time I had my teeth cleaned at the dentist? Mm-hmm. You know, I'll get my book out and I'll be flip through it and okay, it was last November I had my teeth cleaned. I better make an appointment now. It's been, you know, 4 months have gone by. I better make an appointment for 6 months. So
do you make a book for every year, or you just kind of fill it up and then whenever it's filled, you just start a new one?
Yeah, I actually just go until it's full. Okay. And then I start a new one. And I found that has worked just fine for me. It's worked out that actually my current book that I'm using is a year exactly. So it happened to last a year exactly. But the book that I used just before it, which was exactly the same style of notebook, well, that only lasted for about 9 months. So it really depends on how much information you put into your bullet journal as to how long it's going to last. And I find it varies. Sometimes the same style book will last a whole year, sometimes not.
Mm-hmm. I suppose there's flexibility that could be built in. You could use it however you want. I can imagine people using this as their spiritual journal, prayer lists, you know, those kinds of things can all be, you know, put in there as well, right?
Exactly. And that's one of the beauties about it is you can really make it however you want. One of the cautions I would give is if you do a search for bullet journal on the internet, you will be overwhelmed. And you're going to see all of these beautiful pictures of this artwork and everything else that people put into their bullet journal. Mine does not look like that. Mine is a productivity tool. And I just get my bullets down. I get my tasks down. I get my information down. And then I deal with putting that information in the right slots. Because something might start in the bullet journal, but it usually doesn't end there. If it's a task and it's complete, okay, it ends there. But if it's a piece of information, I'm going to shuttle it maybe to my Google Calendar if it's an mm-hmm. appointment that I've got scheduled in the future, because my Google Calendar is my calendar.
Plus, that's going to offer you the reminders and those kinds of things that come
right.
along with that. Yeah.
Right.
So do you take this everywhere you go then? Is this a constant companion?
I do. And I have a little shoulder bag that I usually am carrying my Bible in anyway, or my little pastor's companion book, or my communion kit when I'm out on the road carrying out ministry and making visits. So the bullet journal just slides right in there too. One thing that I also do, and this is, some people are like, well, what if I get a book about this size and I don't want to carry it around everywhere because it's, you know, bulky, it's always in my hand. I want both of my hands free. Well, this is something else that I do is I carry around this. It's a little pocket notebook. Mm-hmm. I have a little pencil clip to it. And I carry this around with me. And this is like my mobile bullet journal. And so I'll put the date in on the page and I'll write stuff down. Like if a member, for example, I'll have this in my suit pocket before church on Sunday.
Yep. That's a GTD thing as well. I always have that capture device with you. You
right.
Never be in a spot where you can't write something down.
And usually the bullet journal is the capture device, mm-hmm. But every once in a while I go mobile and use my little pocket notebook.
All right. Well, I'm certainly inspired and ready to go do more with my bullet journals. I fell into the same quandary that you did. I saw the beautiful pages and I'm not that artistic and stuff, but I do use washi tape and prettiness in mine as well. But I think the true test will be whether Martin's inspired and goes to paper and pencil after how digitally dug in he is.
So Steve, if I were so inclined and inspired, what would you recommend? And maybe a question for anybody wanting to kind of dabble in this or, you know, dive in, what would you recommend? Any tips? Where should I start?
Yeah, I would, a couple of tips. First of all, I would start off by just getting a notebook that you already have. Take something that's on the shelf already. Most of us have some sort of notebook, spiral bound notebook. I mean, it could be, like I said, a composition book, anything. Take what you already have that has some blank pages in it. Watch the two videos that Ryder Carroll put together that kind of outline the bullet journal system. Maybe go to the bulletjournal.com website because he has some tutorials that are right on the website. And that'll just give you an idea of you know, how to carry it out and what to put on every page each day. And then just practice for a month with it. Just do it for a month. And then after that, if you want to dedicate a special notebook, you want to go out and get a special notebook for it, fine. Go and get something at that time. But start off really, really simple. And like I said, a lot of mistakes that people make is they try to make the bullet journal do everything.
Right.
I think that's a big mistake. It doesn't have to be your calendar. I use Google Calendar. It does not have to be your archive where you have to put everything in it, and then you have to go back and search your books. I use OneNote as my digital archive or Google mm-hmm. Drive. So if I want something that's saved long-term, it gets typed in to either a Google Drive document or into OneNote, and then I can easily search those tools, those digital tools, as my archive. So it doesn't have to serve as your archive even. Use it really as that, what it's best in my opinion, that is a task management tool where you're putting down your tasks and you're reviewing your tasks every time you have to turn the page.
Very good. Well, I'm inspired, and I think our listeners will appreciate your insights that you shared, and we'll look for those links in the show notes, and maybe we'll have some bullet journalers among the Wells Tech community.
I hope so.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you much, Steve. Realize busy season for pastures, and you taking the time is just awesome. Thanks for sharing.
Well, thanks for having me, Martin and Sally.
Okay, take care.
Yep.
Lord's blessings honoring your work.
Thank you. You as well. So Sally, seems like it sure works for Steve. He's been using it for some time, had a lot of great tips and information, and we'll put all of the stuff that he mentioned in the show notes as well. So thank you, Steve, for taking the time to do that.
Yeah, he actually followed up with a write-up of the things that he mentioned, and he shared some actual photos. So if you couldn't see it clearly in the video, or you want to get a closer look at some of the pages that he showed us and things, there's a photo gallery, and then he also shared the videos that he referenced about the two methodologies for doing bullet journal, the ways that you do the bullets. So there's videos to watch for that. So greatly appreciate him taking the time to write all that up and share it with us. I think in the interview I mentioned that I am a bullet journaler, but my style is a little bit different. He kind of referenced the fact that you can get overwhelmed by some of the different things people are doing with it. And I like that about it. It lets you be creative and do your own thing. So I did pull out a few of my resources. And the first thing that I have on my list for bullet journaling is that I'm a little bit obsessed with and color. So yeah, I think I have like 5 or 6 different flavors of pens in my arsenal, as well as colored pencils and Sharpies and magic markers and all kinds of things. Definitely I have a favorite, and my favorite is a pen from Pentel. It's called the Pilot G2, and it comes in all these different colors. I think I have a link that I can share in the show notes where I bought a set at Sam's Club for maybe $20, got like 20 pens, and they last about 2 years, and I use them regularly. And the reason I really like color is because for the past several years, I've used an Erin Condren Life Planner. I think I've talked about that on the show before. But it basically has a weekly layout where you can do your to-do list or your appointments or whatever it is. And I guess that's one area that I differ from Pastor Daly in that I do kind of copy down my main calendar events into my weekly spread of activities. Not so much to remember the times, but more to use them as a task motivator. Like I have this meeting coming up, and what do I need to do to be prepared for it? So I do go through the process each week of jotting down what my meetings for the day are. And that's what I've used. I think this is probably my 4th year to use an Erin Condren Life Planner. And if you saw me hold it up to the screen, if you're watching the video, it's a little more decorative. It comes in colors, and I use a colored pen to match the month. And then I add some stickers and washi tape and thing to make it more fun for me. And that's what a lot of people do, and that's what you'll see if you go look around on the web. I do have a mobile version. Pastor Daly mentioned a small notebook that you carry with you, and I just use one from Target. There's a brand called Yubi at Target, and it's just a simple, it's very much like a small moleskin or whatever, just kind of stitched along the binding, and it lays flat easily. And I actually carry two different ones because I use one of them specifically for taking sermon notes. So it's just been my habit for many years to take notes as I listen to the sermon. I get a lot more out of it. I pay a lot more attention when I do that. And so it's really nice. And you know what? I have colored pens in my purse. So every sermon I do in a different color so I can tell when I've switched to a new sermon. You know, it's all about the colors, really important stuff. And then as I've read more about bullet journaling, I also have one more notebook that I've kind of begun using. And it's more of a journal and a free-form notebook like what Pastor Daly was describing. And I still have some pretty things like tassels and things like that on it. But for it, I add some washi tape and drawings and, you know, like here's my prayer list and just different things that I do in it. And then I have a tab toward the back where I actually journal. Martin, you've talked about daily journaling. I don't do it daily yet, but it's a nice place to kind of just capture what's on my brain. So I think I'm going to move toward just the notebook next year, but I have this nice Erin Condren Life Planner, so I'm going to finish out 2017 with it. But I think I'm moving more toward just the free form and design your own. And so we'll have links to all of that. There's different notebooks that people really enjoy using and rate real highly. This one that I use, I got it Office Depot. It costs $3.50. And the one thing that I really like about it that's different than what Pastor Daly showed, and I guess if I hold it up close enough to the camera, maybe you'll see, is that it has a grid pattern instead of lines. Mm-hmm. And that keeps me straight. I tend to scribble all over the place if I don't have something nice like that to keep me straight and to draw my little lines and things that I want to do. So I really like that grid layout. So that's just maybe the female perspective on bullet journaling or just different ways you can do it. And that's what's so neat about the system is that you can do all kinds of things.
Yeah, that came through loud and clear. So I would be remiss and our listeners would be disappointed in me if I didn't ask, does any of your analog creep over into your digital world? Is there copy? Is there crossover? How do you meld those two? Because you do live in a digital world as well.
Definitely. And I think more of my personal life is analog. I don't really worry about it for my personal. If it's written in my book, then I'm good. But for work, I start each Monday with that weekly review. And in my weekly review, I look at my meetings for the week, and that's when I copy down all the times and things in there. But then there's this area on the side, and that's basically my to-do list, my task list that I want to accomplish during the week. And then I'll kind of transfer them to specific days if I'm working on them. But I do have that set-aside time where I review for the week what I want to accomplish, and I look back at what I didn't finish last week on the list and things like that, and do take the time to write it down in my book, even though it's already in Trello and other places, Outlook for our calendaring and things like that. So
okay.
There's a little time invested there, but it also is just that mental review process that's going on at the same time.
Right, right. Cool. I'm sure you'll post stuff in the show notes for that as well. So it sounds like a very flexible system. And you can have fun even, you know, in that analog world. Obviously, you can have fun with different notebooks, different colors, pens, approaches. So hugely popular, you know, as I'm finding out here. So there's got to be something to it. So if you are maybe a bullet journaler at home or work, let us know. We'd love your feedback too, maybe how you do it. And if you're familiar with the system and you found it to be useful or even not, let us know what your experience has been like. So that'd be awesome. All right, Sally, what's next here?
Scrolling down the old mind map, I am reminded that this is episode 491. That means we're getting really close to episode 500, Martin. I think we calculated it's coming up in the first week of June, but we thought as we approach that, we would review the last 10 years of podcasting, almost 500 shows that'll be behind us in June. And we thought we'd start with year one, which was the year 2008. That was the first year that you and I took to the airways. And it wasn't the first time we thought about it, though. I think maybe considering doing a podcast went back a few years before that, I remember one conference that we both ended up attending where we met some people that were podcasting. It was like brand new at that time.
Right. And that kind of got the bug, and we figured that was not that difficult to do. I think both you and I probably were a little fearful of, you know, would we run out of things to talk about, and, you know, do we know enough? And I think all those questions have been answered to different degrees, and it's evolved. I personally can't go back to any of those shows and re-listen. I'm just not going to do that. But it's just looking at the show notes, there was good stuff that we talked about, had some great interviews, and was really a great first year.
If we needed an answer to that, do we know enough? The answer was no. We figured that out pretty quickly.
And every week we answer that, yes.
But we luckily have a whole Wells Tech community to back us up. If we look back at 2008, Martin, by the time we ended that year, someone, and I guess he'll remain nameless, had the good idea to talk about the best and worst of the year. And so we started this tradition of a year-end show, and we looked at the best and worst picks we had made during the year, and I am proud to say that all three of my best picks are still around today, and I'm still using them. I had Google Calendar, Scratch, which is a programming language for students, and Snagit, and they're all still very popular and well used. Interestingly, one of my worst of the year was Google Desktop, and I didn't even remember what that was. There's been so many Google products.
Good reason, yes.
I had to go look it up in Wikipedia to see what it was. It was kind of the desktop overlay that would come up on your screen and tell you what time it was and things like that. So that is no more. So I correctly predicted that that was a worst pick of the week. So
I don't know where I would even find my top three. I should have done that before the show. Did you happen to look that up too?
Yeah, I'm looking at yours. You had Delicious, OpenDNS, and Password Safe as your top three.
Okay. I don't know if Delicious is still around or not. That kind of went the way of the dodo, and I think different things have replaced that. I use Pinboard now for my social bookmark sharing, but Digo, I think we went to next, and that's still around as well. Password Safe is still around, although it has been kind of replaced by things like LastPass, which we're going to talk about in a minute here. Password Safe is, I think, just PC based. There might be a Mac version too, but it's not internet based.
In the cloud, right.
Mm-hmm. And what was the third one?
OpenDNS,
we would still recommend as the thing that you sit in front of your network and does content filtering and does quick lookups and does a lot of good things for you.
Mm-hmm. We use it here in the Draper Homestead, actually.
Okay, cool.
Still a strong contender.
So kind of fun to look back a little bit, and we'll continue to do that as we plot on towards show 500 here. Mm-hmm. Speaking of LastPass and news in tech, LastPass had a potential exploit that was uncovered. I think it was uncovered by Google, in fact, and they just recently pushed out a new update. I think it had mostly to do with the extensions that plug into your browser, whether it was Safari or Chrome, where that could be compromised and there could be kind of a man in the middle that would track your keystrokes and, you know, get access to your passwords. So that not good. And LastPass is what we use in the center office as well. We use actually their enterprise version. We like it so much because it's great for sharing and it does a nice job of managing, but it's kind of scary when one of those kinds of providers, so like 1Password or LastPass, get compromised because they hold the keys to a lot of kingdoms. So I'm glad they were able to patch it. And I guess I would still stick with LastPass. They have real good security, and I think some of these hacks are related to some of the software products that sit in front of that, like these extensions. So it's good to pay attention and keep them updated when they do release new ones.
Definitely keep all your software updated. That's a good experience. Good recommendation there. And shout out to Pastor Emil Burgess. He actually tagged this for us so that we were aware of it via that Digo group you were mentioning a few minutes ago, Martin. And, you know, I can understand when you read something like this to be greatly concerned. He seemed to be pretty concerned because he's, like me, is all in on LastPass. And he did mention 1Password seems to have a stronger reputation from podcasts and bloggers he follows. Mm-hmm. But the desktop app is much more expensive than LastPass. Right. So,
and 1Password did start just on the Mac. So it's fairly new to the PC.
Okay. All right, I'm going to share my screen for a little bit more news in tech. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, Martin, but Google has a new product, another new product. Maybe we'll be talking about it in a few years as something that's gone by the wayside. But, you know, we've heard of Google Home and how it can make the Internet of Things work for us inside our homes. Now there's Google Gnome. And Google Gnome is for outside your home in the great outdoors. And it seems like my page isn't loaded completely. I'm going to do a quick refresh. If you have a chance, surf on over to the link in the show notes and watch the video. It's really cute. But yeah, Google Gnome, the smart yard, is finally here. And you can ask it, what's the wind speed? And it can play fetch with your dog, apparently. So in case you haven't figured out yet, Google Gnome was Google's April Fool's joke, but they just did a really fun job with it, and actually one of my sons asked for a Google Gnome for Christmas, so you've got us sold, Google, and it looks like a great product. Maybe you should go ahead and develop the Gnome. I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah, it's cool looking.
Yeah.
All right. What's going on in Wells, in our Wells Now segment?
A couple of conferences coming up this summer. National Conference on Worship, Music, and the Arts will be June 13th through 16th in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I think that's at Carthage College, if I remember.
I think so.
Correctly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then LWMS, if you're looking for a summer tan, you can go with LWMS down to Orlando, Florida, June 22nd through 25th. So we'll have links to both of those conference registration sites in our show notes. Also wanted to do a quick shout out to Martin Luther College. It's their tradition to provide a Lenten devotional book for use during Holy Week. And I think I can even show it on my screen. So just this week, they announced that their Lenten Truths devotional book is available, and you can actually read it online or download it as a PDF. And it's a beautiful booklet and has great devotions to carry you starting with Palm Sunday all the way through to Easter Sunday. So plenty of time for you to get this before this coming Sunday and make use of it during Holy Week. And just enhance your Holy Week devotional experience. So thanks, nice. MLC, for providing that.
Nicely done. They do that each year. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move. I wanted to circle back on the worship conference. You suggested that people could sign up for the conference in Kenosha, the convention in Kenosha. It also has a second site with alternate dates at Christ College in Irvine, California, and I think that's maybe a couple weeks after. So those of you on the West Coast or would prefer to go to, travel a little bit further or whatever, explore a different part of the country, California, that would be another option.
All right.
Let's move on, Sally, to our picks of the week.
And I have a little pick of the week. It was just a blog post that I read that I thought was interesting. It came from our friends at TechSmith, the creators of Snagit and Camtasia Studio, visual editors and video creation tools, that kind of thing. And it was called Frame Rate, A Beginner's Guide. And I'll have to admit that in the area of video, I have much to learn, Martin. I can kind of make images perform for me the way I want them to and enhance those. But with video, it's a little more of a black box to me how all the magic works to make good video production happen. And I thought this was a great article to just enhance my understanding of video. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot about the fact that video communication and visual communication in general is definitely the way things are moving in our day and age. And so always good to learn more about it. And frame rate is becoming more and more of a talking point as people move to faster frame rates. And I really like the way this blog post explained it. They talked about flip books and how video is really just a fast moving set of still images, and how fast they move kind of contributes to your experience watching the video. And they go through a good explanation. It's not over your head or anything. It's a really well done explanation. They actually have some video that was shot at 60 frames per second versus the more standard 30 frames per second rate. And so you can kind of get a feel for the difference. It does kind of make it a little more realistic in the faster frames, but there's some trade-off there. So it isn't just that you should choose the fastest that you can or whatever, but they kind of cover, you know, some consideration points. And then toward the end of the article, they link to this website, and it just solely exists for you to compare frame rates. Let's see if I can change the background a little, and maybe I'll make it a soccer ball that we can see a little bit better. But there's three different objects on the screen, and they're moving at different frame rates and different speeds in the background, and then you can play with them. So the one, the soccer ball on the top, is moving at 60 frames per second. You could take it down perhaps to 15 frames per second and slow it down a little bit, and you would see it moving across the screen. So you can kind of play with the different speeds and the different frame rates on this website, and maybe that interactive manipulation will help you understand a little bit more about frame rates as well. So again, not something that you're going to go out and use probably tomorrow, but I think it's good stuff to add to your knowledge base, understanding a little bit about video frame rates. So
yeah,
that's my
especially
pick of the week.
With the proliferation of good quality cameras on mobile devices, many of which you can set the frame rate. So that's good knowledge to have, depending on what kind of effect you're looking at, if you want something more cinematic or you want to, you know, use slow motion, whatever. So that's good information. It's good to know more.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My pick of the week is actually very simple. It is just a reminder almost to everybody that you're speaking of iPhones or smartphones. There are some great tools out there to help you get the most out of them. So I'm just going to put a link in the show notes to the iPhone user guide, and they have one for each version. Version 10 is the latest. And the phones themselves are fairly intuitive, but this kind of gives you the soup to nuts and maybe even would open up your eyes to a number of different kinds of things that your phone can do that maybe you didn't know. So it talks about the built-in apps, how to personalize, talks about the basics, you know, the lock screen, the today view, you know, haptic feedback, do not disturb, voice control, use of Siri, those kinds of things for the iPhone. And then Android has something similar, although there are many, many different versions of Android. It's not quite as easy to kind of nail down which is the right help file, because multiple manufacturers make Android devices, LG, Motorola, Nexus, Google themselves, and Samsung, of course. So they have links to all those, and this Android help screen from Google itself is actually very helpful. It talks about how the devices generally work and gives you some quick how-tos, those kinds of things. So these are two links maybe you want to tuck away, depending on which your device is, so that you've got these. So maybe put a link in your regular web browser, your computer web browser, or right in your mobile browser, right on your phone, in case you need to look something up. So just a quick tip on how to get more out of your smartphone.
Very good tip. When I helped my mom set up her iPad, that was one thing. I added a link on her home screen to the iPad user guide, because I think that's a good place to go and look for information. So
absolutely. Yep.
Nice to have it handy.
Mm-hmm. So let's move along to what's next on our hit parade.
I think your next
here.
List,
Ministry
actually
Resources again?
List.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Ministry Resources are things that we do each week. For 2017, Sally and I decided that we would spend some energy kind of focusing on at least one, if not two, ministry resources each week that we've invested some time in, and then write a blog post about it. And that's what I have done. Let me share my screen again for those of you that are watching along at home. And my ministry resource is entitled, let me pull it up here, Top 10 Reasons to Visit WhatAboutJesus.com. We've talked about WhatAboutJesus.com before. It's actually been a ministry resource, but I felt I wanted to spend a little bit more time talking about exactly what it is and why it might be useful for you. And I created this quick top 10 list. And I'll just go quickly through that for you that are listening, but I would encourage you to go to the blog post that'll be linked in the show notes, because there are a lot of things about whataboutjesus.com that might fit a certain situation that you have. So quickly, number one, it addresses many of the common questions a person might have, obviously, about Christianity and, of course, Jesus in particular. It provides even the seasoned Christian with kind of a refresher on core theological topics to kind of get you ready to give the reason for the hope that you have. So it's not just for people new to Jesus or exploring Jesus for the first time, but those people that want kind of that catechetical refresher, if you want to call it that. Number three, it provides daily devotions. Not many people realize that the daily devotions that they might be reading come from the What About Jesus initiative, and they kind of live on that page itself or on that site itself. Same with worship helps. That's a feature that we've talked about in the past. Can prepare new and old Christians for worship the following Sunday, because it lists the common readings and brief questions and answers on each. Provides catechetical aids that cover things like the Apostles' Creed, Communion, Lord's Prayer, and other key topics. Number six, provides an easy way to submit a prayer request. So if you need to ask or would like to submit a prayer request for other people to pray about, you can do that through number six, or through the prayer request feature. That's number six. Number seven, provides biblical answers to relevant questions. So I think what they've done a really good job with on whataboutjesus.com is being relevant. So it's not the stodgy set of theological truths that are just listed there. They are relevant to today's questions and today's environment. Number eight, it provides biblical studies that can be used in many, Bible studies that can be used in many different contexts. Includes studies on books of the Bible, great chapters of the Bible, significant people of the Bible. Number nine, its design is fresh and mobile friendly, so it's been recently converted, so you can be confident that whoever you send the link to, they can open it up on whatever device they're using. And number 10, it has a name that is just easy to remember, whataboutjesus.com. And that's always important for a website. So that, in a nutshell, is my ministry resource. Yeah, consider whataboutjesus.com in your digital evangelism efforts.
Wow, it's like a ministry resource to the exponent of 10. That's really special.
That's right. And it actually was not that hard to put together that list, because there is so much good stuff on whataboutjesus.com.
Awesome.
All right, Sally, now we can move to our featured video of the week.
And I'm excited to move to our featured video. I'm going to share my screen this time because I have an artist friend here in New Ulm, Mr. Jason Jasperson. He actually teaches art at Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School. And I think we've even had him on the show before, but he's just a very gifted artist. I think he's a graduate of Bethany Lutheran College, and I'm pretty sure has pursued postgraduate work. And recently he blogged about the fact that there's a new paint animation from the people at Motion Worship, and he's actually the artist behind the animation. So he tells a little bit of the story very quickly on his blog. He says Motion Worship is run by Josiah Smith. He and his camera operator Will came to my studio to film the sequence August 2nd and 3rd of 2016. Josiah said that Motion Worship is a family-owned business dedicated to the high-quality production of worship media for the church. We're also passionate about providing great content at an affordable value. They are a world leader in the Christian worship projection field right here in Minnesota. They've been professional grade through the process of storyboarding, directing, and shooting the video, editing, and distribution. I'm honored to work with them and pray that this video stimulates faith. God only knows what a video like this can do as it is viewed and shared online and downloaded by congregations worldwide. And he has a few pictures of the creation process. So the concept was that they set up this studio where he painted on a canvas. And it's somewhat like the sand art that we've featured from Jason in the past, where he continued to paint over and over the picture to recreate the different scenes. And it starts with creation and goes through the good news of the Easter resurrection. So the video is available. It's got a watermark on it, but you can watch it on YouTube, and we'll have that embedded on our show notes so you can see Jason at work on the piece. Just an amazing process to watch the whole thing. He's super talented, and there's some really beautiful narration that goes along with it as well. But you can also, as he said, download the video for a subscription price from Motion Worship. And I wasn't familiar with Motion Worship, but they have a lot of great content for congregations out there. So if you're interested in the HD or SD version of the video for use in your congregation or ministry setting, you know, we'll have a link in the show notes to that as well.
Very nice. Cool. Mm-hmm. Very cool. All right, Sally, we're going to do episode 492 next week. What are we going to be talking about?
Coming up next week, it's a return to our social media for ministry segment. We've been sprinkling all throughout this season of podcasting, and I think we've just about exhausted all the different social media channels, Martin. We've talked about Facebook and YouTube and Pinterest and Instagram and several others along the way. I think last month we talked about photo hosting or image hosting on Flickr and on Google Photos. So this month we're going to take a little bit different look at it, and we're going to focus on building ambassadors in your congregation and school. So ambassadors in terms of spreading your social media. So teaching how your congregation members, your school parents, how to spread the good news with the content that you're creating on these various channels. And we've talked about this in the past. We had a great interview with Justin Ware, and we may revisit that a little bit, but I think it's definitely a topic that fits well with our social media series that we've worked on this season.
Very good. Looking forward to it. If you'd like to contribute to the show, that is always encouraged, because we have monthly community feedback shows where we gather all that up and talk through things that have been shared with us. Go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and look across the top, and you'll see a bunch of links to all our social network presences. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net, or you can stay right on that page and click on the comment icon on one of the posts, and we will get that information as well. So there's really no shortage of ways to contribute to the conversation, and we really wish you would. Thank you, Sally, for all your work in my absence, and have a blessed Lenten journey. We're closing in on Holy Week here, so that's not too many days in the future. So blessings on that, and blessings to our listeners and viewers that they would do the same, and hopefully you will come back and visit again next week. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.